Blog Talk Radio.
Looks like we're shy of one horse.
You brought two too many.
evening. Happy hump day. If you're trying to wring yourself dry, it's humid as fuck outside, so wring with care. Good evening, good evening, good evening. Welcome to the Soul Tree. I'm your host, Michael Lewis Engelman. As always, it is good to be with you. Soul Tree Radio, the Raw, proudly sponsored by BASMNewsroom.com and the Assassins of the Black Athlete Sports Network. get all the good shit, the who, what, when, where, why, and how, right now at www.BASMNewsroom, all one flavor, all one phrase.com. Shout out to the members of the Brotherhood Network who will be checking in eventually as we come into view tonight. On our mind is what to wear to funeral. Now, what I mean by that is it was 5, 10, I think a little more than 10 years from now, as I'm waiting on my brothers to get in here, that Tony McClain, Big T, said, this is the death of the running back. I know what he meant by that at the time, but as we've seen the greedy bastards get even greedier with the money that's made off of fantasy football, and off the fact that, how can I say this, the players have gotten more money for less time, but there's X factor that you ain't going to be around much longer because your shelf life is reduced. As I say this, my brother Gary Norris comes into view. What's up, Gene?
What's up, brother? I know, man.
Now, we were talking about how running backs are effective. They're just not as important. And the past few months...
Well, how many running backs are there?
Well, I really don't give a shit about the color of the running back, but I know what you're saying.
But Michael, exactly what he did 10 years ago. 15 years ago with a quarterback. Exactly the same thing.
Well, that's true. That's true. I don't belabor that point, but what I am saying is, back then, you couldn't think about football without the ball being run, and you couldn't think about running the ball without running backs. And
I'm gonna tell you this: the Dallas Cowboys, the Las Vegas Raiders.
Yep.
And the New York Football Giants are not going to Super Bowl. You know why?
Why?
Because the inside of the running back. I don't care who you are. If you can't do this, you are not going to Super Bowl. Period.
Well, there may be some truth behind that, but allow me to expand on this. I saw something on YouTube recently that kind of opened my eyes up a little bit. And YouTube is good for stuff every now and then. They focused on three movies, North Dallas 40, Any Given Sunday, and Concussion. And they talked about what was going on behind them. North Dallas 40 focused on the politics of football court. Any Given Sunday pretty much was a photo play about Styles running as opposed to, throwing the ball deep, et cetera, and Concussion. Well, Concussion had its own epitaph regarding the violence in pro football. But where this leads me is when Oliver Stone did Any Given Sunday, I think his intent was to focus on the style aspect of the game. I forget what year Any Given Sunday came out, but you know the ball was being thrown a lot more. You know, fantasy football was alive and well, and it was a background in which they were trying to develop more revenue streams and make more money. And fantasy football was perfect for the time.
That is true. Because the average took out 35 times a game. I remember when I was a kid. That never happened before. 35, 40 throws a game.
Right.
When I was little. No, that didn't happen.
Yeah, workloads have reduced somewhat from throwing the football a little bit to throwing the football a lot. Running the ball used to eat up clock. It used to be a time-worn strategy in the game that would allow you to buy time on the clock, eat up clock, and maintain a personality for your team.
And in the middle of Michael, in the middle of November, in the middle of December, guess what? You got to run the ball. You know why? Because it's too damn cold, windy, and snowing. You ain't going to run the ball 35 times.
In some places, I would agree, but that's not everywhere. But let me speak with the source. As Tony has joined us here, Big T, we got to give you Negro Dallas points because you predicted the death of a running back a few years before anybody even thought about it, let alone talking about it.
Yes, he did.
So expand if you will.
And mind you, I'm not proud of that. But it's, you know, what's kind of sad is, you know, we all remember when the rule changes began in the early 80s to bump up the passing game and stuff. And, you know, we saw, now, again, if you're of a certain age, you're old enough to remember the old Chargers of the AFL. Hell, even, you know what, let me bring up a team that sort of gets lost in the shuffle. The 1969 New York Giants.
Ah.
About 69 or 68, whatever. Fran Tarkenton, uh-huh. Homer Jones. God, who else? They were a little ahead of their time. But the thing is, you look at all of these great teams that have been dynasty type teams that are whatever. Yes, they've all had great defenses, but see, they all ran the ball. And see, to me, whenever you hear the analyzing of a Super Bowl, because you have those 2 weeks and they analyze that thing, you know, down to the white meat, as you like to say. And I think historically, if you look at every Super Bowl winner, and there may be maybe like less than, say, 10 exceptions, the majority of the teams that ran the ball, that ran for the most yards, that had the most running yards, won the game. No matter how many times they could throw in and all the other stuff, the team that was able to run the ball more on a consistent basis won the game.
True.
And that's the thing. You know, we all grew up on that old NFL film clip. You know, say it with me. Seal here. Run that right up the alley.
In the alley.
That's Bronco Nagurski, that's Marion Motley, That's John Henry Johnson. That's Jim Brown.
Mm-hmm.
That's Red Grange. Yep. That's Walter Payton. That's Leroy Kelly. That's Gale Sayers. And on,
yep,
and on and on and on and on and on. But somewhere along the way, the NFL collectively, between its West Coast offenses and its red guns and its, you know, run and shoot and all that. I mean, for Christ's sake, they call it run and shoot, not pass and shoot, for Christ's sake.
Uh-huh.
But somewhere along the way, football basically turned its back on the running game and on the runners. And, yes, we all know you need an elite quarterback to win and all that other stuff. But my exhibit A, my first exhibit A is one Dan Marino. Dan Marino,
uh-huh,
got to one Super Bowl in his entire career. If Dan,
yep,
if Dan Marino had had a dominant type running back to go along with that incredible offensive line that they had, I think he would have won as many Super Bowls as John Elway. And I'm going to use John Elway as Exhibit B. I'm going to use John Elway as Exhibit B because all those years that John Elway got to the Super Bowl and always got his large teeth handed to him, it was because he did not have a running game. You know, Bobby Humphrey and Sammy Winder be damned. But until one Terrell Davis got into town, Denver Broncos were not Super Bowl. I mean, they get to Super Bowl, but they couldn't win it.
That's true.
And even the greatest show on turf would only wind up being a barrel of monkeys if it wasn't for Marshall Faulk. Now, Marshall Faulk was one of those all-purpose guys and what have you. But see, that's the thing. In the NFL, you run the ball. And again, like what Gary said, if you're a cold-weather team, I've always felt of all those Patriot teams that won those Super Bowls, I would always argue the one that beat the Eagles, sorry, Mike, that had Corey Dillon was their best team. I think that team would have beaten the quote-unquote 18-1 team only because you had a Corey Dillon who was at the peak of his career, damn near got 2,000 yards. There was a balance. There was a balance. And they've, you know, of all their Super Bowl winning teams, I would always argue that was their best team because they had the balance. They could, you know, they could beat you either way. Because even as good as that 18-1 team came up, if you, you know, as the Giants showed, if you forced them to run the ball or either do play or either control, they lose. And the ultimate and my Exhibit C is one that I have to take a little bit personally because it was one of my favorite teams growing up, that being the Houston Oilers, and especially the 1993 Houston Oilers of the run and shoot. We all know the deal.
Yep.
Wild card playoff weekend in Buffalo. They are up 38-3 at the half.
Yep.
I'm literally sitting with my brother Stan. Mm-hmm. What do you want to order for next week's game? What do you want to want to order the same wing? We were literally planning our week for the next week or whoever they were going to play. At this moment, I forget who they would have possibly played. I guess they would have been going to Pittsburgh, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
But 38-3 becomes 38-10. Becomes 38-17, becomes 38-24, becomes 38-31, and we all know how that movie ended. Leonardo DiCaprio died, as well as the Oilers' defense, and Buffalo has the greatest comeback in not only playoff history but NFL history, all because they could not run out the clock because they could not run the ball. As great as Eric Coryell was, they never got to a Super Bowl.
Okay.
They had it's not like they didn't have the running backs, but again, everybody gets such a hard on with throwing the ball and throwing the ball and throwing the ball. And, you know, what's interesting is if you remember the Coryell Cardinal teams, great offensive teams, you know, Terry Metcalf, Mel Gray, Jackie Smith, I think a very, very young Pat Tilly, too, if I remember, if I'm not going back too far.
Yep.
But even with that, you know, MacArthur Lane, who was a very underrated running back in a Wayne Morris, but they could never get out of the first round. One of the reasons, now, what's interesting is, to bring it all full circle, everyone says the West Coast offense began with Bill Walsh in San Francisco, and I would tell you, no, it didn't. And I don't say that because I dislike Bill Walsh or what have you. The actual home of the West Coast offense was your 1972, 73, 75 Minnesota Vikings with another Hall of Fame quarterback, Fran Tarkenton. But he also had guys like Chuck Foreman, Brent McClanahan, he was about 186 at the time, but still he was and yes they had guys like Ahmad Rashad and John Gilliam or what have you, but one of the reasons why they were always able to be in the mix was because as much as they passed the ball, and we all know 4 o'clock games in Minnesota on Sunday, you don't throw the ball a little bit, but nine times out of ten,
I used to be a Ram fan back in the day, back in those days.
And you know what happened when the Rams would go into Minnesota? The Rams would have the division won by Thanksgiving and would be home for the playoffs by Christmas. One year they got to an NFC championship game, but
it was like zero degrees in Minnesota.
And I remember that was the early game that day, if I remember correctly. So basically I say all that, and you know what? This week I don't mind being the old man in the mountains, and I don't want them painted. But that's football. All this throwing. And did I say throwing? it's all, and I'll be honest, and maybe we're, you know, maybe we're the exception, not the rule, but one of the turnoffs to me with the NFL, one of the major turnoffs in watching the NFL now is that running backs are basically treated like, remember the Army figurines that you would buy back in the day as a kid for like a dollar? You'd get like a bag of them, and it'd be like 1,000 Army. That's basically what they think of running backs now in the NFL. And when you realize, you know, now some of us are still trying to get over the death of Jim Brown. Who, let's face it, you know, it's argument worthy, but you can make the case that if they ever have a running back of the year award, if you don't call it the Jim Brown Award, you may have to have grown women call you out and cuss you out in public, but that's another story we can get into. But the thing is, the fact that basically the running back and the running back position in the National Football League now is literally scorned. And I just don't get it.
Tony, what we're seeing, I think, is running backs are turning into one contract players. By that I mean we already know running backs have the shortest shelf life. You know, 3.5 maybe in terms of season, and make it to the union to get the pension, you got to be here for 4.5 years. So what players are getting are one contract situations. You got exceptions. You have exceptions. Like Elliott in Dallas. Elliott ran for 7 years till they released him. But the fact that he played 7 seasons is more than expected from the rule. Now, you get one contract. And a rookie contract is 5 years. You hope to get to your second one. Otherwise, you're released. And teams save good jobs of money because of that. They got the professor friends with it with this as well. But I'm saying, with a rookie contract, your last year is hopefully a year you make good. I saw an example of that myself when Miles Sanders, who used to play for my Eagles, got his second contract, and he'll be playing for the Carolina Panthers now. But the drafts are like night and day. They used to talk about hot running backs and all that other stuff. We had one featured back in this draft. One guy who I think went to Atlanta. So now you got everybody wondering, well, what is needed for a back? You can make a fullback out of a tight end or H-back, but what's really made for a running back to exceed and exist in today's NFL, gentlemen?
You know, it's crazy because to me, and I don't mean to monopolize, but it's sort of like pitchers not pitching complete games anymore. It's like, oh, God, he's got 100 pitches. Stop, you know, hide the women and children. He's got 100 pitches. You need to take them out. It's crazy to me that running backs in the NFL – an alleged quality start in Major League Baseball, and I guess to a certain extent, no true centers in the NBA, so to speak.
Yeah.
All of those, you know, all of them are becoming almost as extinct as the dodo bird, and it's crazy, and especially with the running backs, because football is about, I mean, end of the day, football is running the ball.
Exactly.
You still have to run the ball. Even you know, I know when Fred gets on, he's going to talk about the old Steelers. And the thing about this, the thing that I always gave Noel credit for was when they did their 4 Super Bowls in 6 years, basically. The first two seasons, it was more Blyer and Franco. When they went back to back in the latter half, they were still there, more of a passing team, but still they always had the balance. And
right.
I think that's one of the things that always set them apart in those dynasties. Because,
well, you know, it really bothered me that the New York Football Giants sit there and sign the quarterback for a gazillion dollars, whatever it is, and they're going to fight over Saquon Barkley, who made
And see, it's not like, and again, he's a one-hit wonder. And what, and see, here's the ironic thing. One of the reasons why they're trying to call him an elite running a quarterback is because he can run a little.
Yeah.
Really? Really? Even, Joe Gibbs won with three separate quarterbacks, but he also had dominant runners in each of those Super Bowls. He had, You had Gerald Riggs second Super Bowl, with the second Super Bowl. If I remember, I think maybe Terry Allen was the third guy. But that's the thing; they always had dominant. And even afterwards, when you had guys like Clinton Portis and but the Giants of all teams who've had a history of great running backs with Ron Johnson and Joe Moore.
SIU, about 10 years ago, SIU guy.
Yeah. Brandon Jacobs. If their history has always been about running the ball. Now, to me, the jury is still out on Daniel Jones. I mean, at this point, I could see if he had gotten you. I mean, for Christ's sake, Kerry Collins got them to a Super Bowl, for Christ's sake, I don't think he's as good as Kerry Collins was. Not that Kerry Collins is elite, but Terry Collins could do something, and even that team ran the ball.
We got big problems, no doubt. I got the professor, and I got Eric Sutter with us on the line. But professor, first to you, running the ball has always been what makes football football. What happens when you create an imbalance by getting rid of running, or
it's called fiasco.
Yes,
it's called fiasco ball. Most sports today have gotten away from their original foundation, the original motives behind why they played. They had certain rules. Everything now is stop the defense from stopping the offense. We have made athletes so good on offense or defense that you can almost put almost anybody into the game and make them be successful with them. Unlike hockey, where you square off and, as they say, size does not matter. It's how fast you can move. They have this thing in hockey called hitting.
Yeah.
It's one of the few things about hockey I truly like, the way they do it to a degree, except for one thing. I forget the teams who were playing. I know both teams had red and white, so I naturally love both teams. But the thing that shook me was, you have this one guy, who, as they said, in his bare feet was 6'7". He hit this dude standing on a center block, was not 6'7".
Right.
Knocked him out cold. Mm-hmm. And I hear, whoa, great hit. Homeboy didn't move for 10 minutes. But they allowed it. But in football, they've taken away hits below the waist. You got hits above the shoulder.
Yep.
None of which are legal now. They have defanged the lions, so to speak. Because there's so little that's allowed now. And not only do they hit guys, you hit somebody hard in football now, they not only throw you out of the game, in most cases you can be out of the game if you go out in the first half. You got to skip the first half of the next game along with the rest of the game you were playing in. And they got it so screwed up now. And, again, I was watching some college games that we covered back in the day with Onadan. And just going back and looking, I would say by the late 80s, early 90s, they had started tampering with the game. You know, you had face mask, intentional, face mask, unintentional. 5 yards, 15 yards. Then they came back with horse collar. Okay? You can't tackle a guy using the horse collar. I don't object to it, but there has to be some level of stability in how it's called. And, you know, and just to be nice about it, one crew may call it tight, the other game, other crew doesn't. One conference may call it tight, the other conference doesn't. And all these inconsistencies makes it hard to not only learn the game, but to teach the game. And, you know, the talking heads, I mean, the nicest way I can say this, and I hope none of you call games, but sometimes the talking heads need their throats cut because it's obvious their biases with them, as well as sometimes they just don't know what the hell they're talking about.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
Eric, do you find the same problem?
Well, yeah, it's pretty interesting. I mean, running back position, if you look, what was the brother that played at Michigan State a few years ago, right? He was tearing it up. He played for Mel Tucker, right? And he
put up a, I can't think of that.
You know what I'm talking about, right? And that was just a couple of seasons ago, right? I mean, he was, like, threatened, right, from Michigan State. You know, great statistics, small back. I don't even know if he's even in the league as far as now, or even if he is, he's having very minimal impact. So if you look at the collegiate game, where usually the Heisman Trophy winner was around the running back position, right? You know, USC, you know, Juice, you know, Marcus, you know, Charlie White, right? If you look at, you know, going back to the running backs, Dorsett right out of Pitt was a Heisman. Moving forward, Marcus was, right? And then Archie Griffin was back-to-back, you know, small back, you know, had a, you know, mediocre, professional career. Ron Dane had incredible statistics at Wisconsin, mediocre at best at the Giants, or maybe a little bit above mediocre. So usually the league, right, a little bit above mediocre perhaps. So if you look at some of the running backs that come out of the collegiate game over the years that were dominating the Heisman Trophy winners, that's no longer the case, correct? You know, we haven't seen that, you know, in a while. And if the running back,
it's been a while.
Charles Rogers of South Carolina, Bo, right? You know, Bo Jackson. Mm-hmm. I mean, so if
you're the last guy might be Eddie George.
Eddie, exactly. Now head coach at Tennessee State. You know, had a cool little career at with the Titans, but the collegiate game, you know, was establishing the so-called run, the so-called Woody Hayes, right? Three clouds and a cloud of dust. Rushes and a cloud of dust, whatever, however that saying went. What was it again?
Three yards.
Right? Just, I mean, they weren't running shit, you know, according to, and then if you look at Switzer's, was that the single wing he ran, or what was that offense?
Wishbone.
Thank you. So, thank you. Yeah, I love it. Yeah, Wishbone, right? And they weren't, I mean, if you've seen them brothers throw the rock, man, 5, 6, 10 times, that was a miracle, right? Sure. And so you had the Wishbone. So this ground attack game and the way things are scouted nowadays and the way the game is played, so that all starts back with Bill Walsh, right, with the so-called West Coast offense. So when he came in, they were, you know, I mean, Montana was dinking and dumping, dinking and dumping, even though he wasn't the first to do that, right? There's brothers in the collegiate game that were doing it as well, especially at the HBCUs. But he was getting the credit for this West Coast offense, right? And Craig went for 1,000 yards rushing and 1,000 yards receiving. And I believe that Detroit 1 year was the first. That was routine. But back then, Detroit was the first team to have a 1,000-yard rusher with Barry Sanders and two 1,000-yard receivers, Perryman and Herman Moore, right? And that was the Mouse Davis. That was the Mouse Davis attack, right? What are they call? What did they call that offense again? I forgot.
Run
what they
shoot.
Like the little
run and shoot.
The run and shoot. I love
run
it. Yeah,
shoot.
The run and, yeah, there you go. The run and shoot, right? Which was Willie Taggart. Was the master of the run and shoot. That's another story. So they had all that kind of change and mix with the back weren't really, you know, grinding out. So now they've gone to, what, a 17-game season? A 1,000-yard rusher was considered good when it was in a 14-game season. That turned out to be, like, what, 68 yards a game or 80 yards a game over 14
pretty
games
much.
Or something
roughly.
To
yeah,
get a 1,000?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. It was not, you're not averaging 100 yards a game. So Dickerson and that the Mustang attack, Mustang Express, which were actually him and James. Right? So Dickerson came in.
Pony Express.
There you go. There we go. Yeah. All these terminologies was all associated with these running attacks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Dick, you know, as you saw, you know, he translated to the pros, but John Robinson loved it, but they weren't going to win a Super Bowl with that style, right? Then when the time he got to Indianapolis, it was over. Then when he ended with the Raiders, it was over. So you look – now, the oxymoronic thing about that, Dallas does not win all those Super Bowls without Emmitt. Impossible. They do not win those Super Bowls without Emmitt Smith, right?
Yeah,
what he did, right? So that's the last great rushing attack football player that translated – to winning at the highest level with the Dallas Cowboys and their great wall of Dallas, the offensive line they had obviously was a big key to that as well. And at that same time, Thurman Thomas is chewing up all kinds of yardage in Buffalo, in the K-Gun offense, right?
True.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so you look at the running back production in terms of guys that can receive, catch, run. That hasn't really – I don't think we've seen a back like Thurman that has both those dual numbers since, right, that had the dual receiving and rushing yards.
Right.
And, again, that did not translate into, you know, being a championship team. So these teams on the analyst – so Brady's been to 10 Super Bowls, right? Now, he's had Corey Dillon a few years. A lot of times they had these, you know, make it and break it back. Now, the last time we see the great combination of running and passing was Marshawn and Wilson, and they didn't win it, right? They didn't win it the second time around. So the evolution of the game and the way that they play football, and if we watch these college scores, right, what, like 66 to 64 games, triple overtime? Right? Somebody's, I mean, Baylor, when they were running, I mean, they're putting up some numbers in these college games. So they've brought those offenses to the NFL, like Joe Burrow, for example, that LSU team. Right? I mean, they were going up top. They had a cool little back that went to the Chiefs. But the receivers that he had that are now at, what, Minnesota and Cincinnati, right, they got great stats, and they're all pros. Games change, and it's like, the way that the coaching is coaching around the game and the way that they're stretching their field, sometimes you can have too much information, man. I mean, they've got so much scouting data and viewpoints. And then what those other teams did not have was the drone view of the field 24/7, right? They didn't have the drone view. So they had to get on the ground, you know, bust out, get grimy with it, you know, pounding ground, whatever you want to call it. Now they've got so many angles and views where the passing game attack, you can't cover that much field. So they're going up top. You know, so now if you can't throw it, like Tennessee. So they got Derrick Henry. Oh yeah, he's pounding out yards.
And they just picked up Hopkins as well.
Exactly. They're expected a little more. To win in today's National Football League, the way the game is designed, if you're scouting and you're looking for players, can you get a serviceable back and win? The answer to that is yes. In today's NFL, now, dude from the Rams that went to Georgia when they went to the Super Bowl, right? I forgot his name, man. What was his name
again? Todd Gurley.
Exactly. Gurley was killing it, right? Then in the Super Bowl, he kind of got hurt, or they didn't use him right, which was strange, right? That was some strange shit. And it hasn't been the same since.
Nope.
You know, so in other words, who is the Kansas City's chief top back with all these championships that they rolled into? There really isn't one.
It was a rookie that was their leading rusher.
Yeah, Pacheco. Pacheco from Rutgers. But he's not a 20-carry-a-game guy, right?
Not with that offense.
Exactly. Ezekiel Elliott, right? I don't think anyone signed him.
No.
Yeah, he's still on the outside looking at him.
He's still lingering. Mm-hmm. But when he came
out of Ohio State,
he came out of Ohio State, right, he was the hot, what I'm saying. And Pollard got hurt.
Oh, yeah.
And he got contract, but Pollard has never been a Pro Bowler, correct?
No,
not yet.
In other words, the running back position is not like phased out. It's part of the game. It will be part of the game, but they're looking at these scenarios and the serviceability in the game. Saquon can't stay on the field, regardless of what anyone else says. His availability is not there.
And that's probably one of the main reasons why they won't give him his due. Won't give him his money.
The QB race, position, exactly. Yeah. But in other words, I'm like you, man. I mean, I've always been, fond of the so-called Air Coryell bullshit, in the past, because guys were throwing up top a lot in the HBCUs before Air Coryell, right, where he got it from, again, another story. But the thing is that the pass game attack is still the most lethal side of the scoring option in the NFL. And Mahomes, right, I mean, the way that he can just carve shit up and the way they draw it up in Kansas City and his use of multiple receivers, even without the cheetah, he can take it to the top. And cheetah put up phenomenal numbers, right? But, like, who was Miami's best back? And now these running backs, now the quarterback position, they're now quarterback / running back. Jalen Hurts, leading rusher for that team.
You don't need a quarterback that's 6'7".
Yeah, Dan McGuire and those dudes, right? But the thing is that the quarterback position nowadays, if you look at that was so-called, RG3, whatever they called it. When you looked at him at Baylor, right, it was like the what I would call the Reggie Bush syndrome, right? I mean, he was eating it up and throwing up so much numbers, Xbox numbers when he was at Baylor, but it didn't translate to the pros. He got hurt because he can't take the pounding. Vic, these guys changed the game, and Vic was always Atlanta's leading rusher when, peak Vic, right? He was like their leading rusher quarterback. So the brothers, now here's the oxymoronic thing about this. The brothers dominating the quarterbacking position, showing up in the Super Bowl consistently. If you look at the top draft picks this year, the brothers dominated the quarterback position on all the top draft spots. Because the brothers are so nice with the run game and the throw game, they have wilted down the running back. That's what the power of the black quarterback has done. So that new development of having a guy under center who can take off, right, break you off 80 yards at any time, that's what Jalen did. Jalen and Tagalova were at one time at the same university. Davis bounced from Alabama because he got, what, benched in the fourth quarter of the national title game with Tua.
Yep.
So he goes to Oklahoma. He rips it in half. Look at the brother from the small Murray, right? That's Arizona.
Yeah, yeah. Kyler Murray.
Right. Is he their leading rusher?
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is,
yeah, they got the dude from Pittsburgh to come over, and then they had a cat that they traded for Houston that had a really good year, right? I forgot his name. He hasn't been good since. He got injured.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
the majority of those years, I will say that Murray's no less than the second best rusher on that team, if not number one, since he's been there.
Yeah.
Cumulatively, right?
He got hurt, he was leading.
Sorry?
See, even when he got hurt, he was among the leaders.
Exactly.
Not only that team, but the league.
Exactly. Exactly. Like the move he busted in the Raiders in overtime last year. Remember that? I mean, I know Gene remembers it because he's a Raider fan. It's that time again, fellas. You know what I'm saying? You know, the autumn wind is a Raider. So with all that being said, if you look at the top rushers for each NFC that's not locked in the pocket like a Brady, Brady doesn't win that Super Bowl without that brother from LSU that came over from Jacksonville.
Leonard Fournette, right? Well, see, that's,
and even this kid, even this dude from the Jaguars, you know, he's up there with their leading rushers as well.
Yeah. It's you still and see, that's been my thing historically. Out of, you know, with all the Super Bowl winners, even the ones that may have thrown the ball more than they ran during the regular season, to win the Super Bowl, you still have to be able to run the ball on a consistent basis.
Defense offsets it, right? Because if you have that strong D, right? What LaDainian? Oh yeah, LaDainian put up numbers, but again, same concept. No ring.
Yep.
The evolution of the brother, the Vic. You know, we can go on with all the names, right? That now, or and you look at the collegiate game, they're all over the place. I mean, it's getting that NLI number. If you can't, in other words, take off with the Rock. I mean, Lamar Jackson, come on. He's always been their leading rusher.
Pretty much.
No one can name, you know, the backs that have more yards than Lamar. Cumulatively, the leading rusher for the Ravens, since Lamar's been under center, is Lamar.
Pretty much.
That's right.
Pretty much.
The brothers have changed the game, so it's a reverse engineer concept. It's the evolution. So the black quarterbacks come in, and they've made. And these guys are saying, like, shit, we get a quarterback that we can literally run plays for offensively, like Lamar, you know, Vic, and cornerback. We need a serviceable back, right? And we're cool.
It's making teams rethink, because if, say, Gary Gray with the tailback, and I signed into a rookie contract for 3 years. Running back averages 3.5 years. If Gary puts up decent numbers, he'll get a second contract somewhere as a free agent. If not, I can release him, and I'll find somebody else.
Look at Ezekiel Elliott. So Ezekiel Elliott comes in. Ohio State won the national championship with under center, correct? I mean, you know, he was their dog that night. You don't remember the quarterback who played. Ezekiel tore it up. Okay, so he goes to Dallas, you know, he has some good years, you know, pro bowler. Now, right now, he can't even get a second contract because production went way down, mileage is way up, and they're running it. They're still got Pollard, who's serviceable. And remember, Dalvin Cook. Did he sign with anybody?
Well,
right? Is he still out there, or did he sign?
It's interesting. Cook is an all-pro for the 4 years he's played. He made the Pro Bowl, and he's scratching for a job.
That's my
everybody's
point.
Everybody's paying attention to the reality that these guys need work. And under the veteran minimum, they can give him $1.5 million. Maybe they'll incentivize it with some other extra candy. But for the most part, all the teams save money because they're not spending big money on a running back.
Is Jacob signed with the Raiders, or he's still floating too with a contract?
He's with the Raiders, but he ran the ball 340 times last year. I know exactly where you're going with this.
Exactly. And I don't believe he's resigned.
No.
Or maybe he has. I haven't followed it. What was that, Steve? So he's, I mean, so you look at these backs, and now we're not in the injured reserve report. Every Monday's hell day in the National Football League, because they got to spend Monday looking at the injuries from Sunday.
Right.
Who are they going to activate? Who are they going to waive? You know, I mean, who's off? Who's going to go on injured reserve? Every Monday, it's a crash test course in the league.
Yep.
You know, in terms of availability of players and what they need to do. And so they don't even stack the depth at running back. As long as they can get a cat like a Pacheco, mix them in, serviceable, that's what enhanced the tight end with Kelce, right? So they're
exactly.
Like, okay, we're going to get quarterback and get a tight end that can get under coverage, and we can throw up some good schemes. We'll be okay. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we'll be competitive because now the backs are ripping it up. Like, what was Jamal Lewis, right? He was the last catch to run for 2K.
Yep.
And then he ended up with Cleveland, I think, to end his career.
Uh-huh.
Okay, but you look at what, you know, I mean, when he tore up 2,000, Baltimore was not even the mix again. So Dick threw up 2,000 yards. O.J. threw up 2,000 yards, didn't convert to a Super Bowl. You know, so
right.
It's like oxymoronic. I mean, these cats are good. They need a game. They'll always have a place in the game. But if you are a GM, now see yourself as a GM of a team, and you're putting your squad together, what do you need value-wise to win? You know, do you need the, you know, 3 yards and the cloud concept? You got to go up
exactly.
Top. There's no way around it. I got to get up top, man. You know, and then that's why DBs get drafted so high, like the dude Sauce from the Jets.
Well,
right?
They know the game. They know the type of game that's being played. They've got to find
exactly.
Them defend the counter.
Exactly.
It's not that their offensive philosophies have changed that much. It's just that they know what they need to do to stop other people. And
if you're a GM and you're on the board, right? If you're the GM and you're on the board and you got a top flight receiver, this young man Jefferson from LSU, I mean, nice, right? The dude from Buffalo, I mean, that's there. Well, I forgot Diggs. Right?
Diggs.
And Diggs. The kid from that also was an LSU teammate of Jefferson from Minnesota, who's in Cincinnati. They also use him a back. Now, think about the Niners, right? So, man, I mean, it's amazing how you get away from the league and you see these guys all the time. What's the receiver for the Niners that they also use as a running back all the time?
Samuel.
Well, what was his name again?
Samuel.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, Debo, exactly, Debo. Right, so Debo, they use Debo like a running back above the backs that they have. They do the same thing in Cincinnati with this kid from LSU. And they can also send him deep. So these guys are so nice that they're using them as backs, receivers that can not only get under coverage, not only be clutch, but can take it deep. And you got a guy like Burrows and these guys who can rip it in half and throw the rock. And they use these diverse offenses. We've seen the same thing with KC, right? I mean, a lot of times they do a shuttle pass or a quick pitch to the cheetah when he was there.
Yeah.
Hey, Garoppolo, right?
Yeah. I mean, they
okay,
so if you got a guy on the board that's a receiver or a running back in today's NFL, the rule of thumb is you're gonna take that receiver.
But Garoppolo did not have the backup eye, and that's why he failed. The Niners were throwing the ball 45-50 times a game. And he couldn't do that.
The Niners, though, are oxymoronic, though. They're the last of the true rushing football teams. The Niners run the rock. Shanahan runs the rock.
Yeah.
They are easily the Raiders. The team that leads the NFL in rushing each year. That's the Niners. You know, and then
when they
brought in, what's this dude today, McCaffrey, right? The Niners, though, Niners, any one of these running backs being an all-pro. But the Niners run. They do run the rock. And then they trust their defense and their pass rush.
It's because they're a blocking team. The Niners are dirty blockers because they use the cut block thing. Shanahan used it, his father, when he was in Denver. And Jimmy
Walsh was dirty with it. I forgot that offensive line coach's name that Howie Long wanted to savage after a game 1 year for, you know, the top line. But they run.
And
the Niners do run more than any other NFL team consistently.
Exactly. But Fred, let me ask you. You like a team like Pittsburgh that has shown balance over years. Do you think a team will be so desperate that they'll just drop their offensive philosophy to get a piece of the rock at least one point?
Well, as long as the current management and coaching staff are in place, they will probably maintain some level of connectivity to the 70s, run and beat the hell out of you on defense. Once Tomlin and Junior and the rest of the family, you know, may step aside. You're going to have someone come in who will be, quote, the new majority on ownership team. They're going to come in. They're going to have a better idea. They're going to have a different idea. You're going to see, in all likelihood, in spite of what fan preference is, and we know what that is, and you will never see a team the quality of the 70s team when we had the four Super Bowls in 6 years. You'll never see that again in Pittsburgh. Why? Because everybody, and we see this most prevalently with Jerry Jones. No matter how idiotic you may be when it comes to putting the team on the field, he has hurt that team. He has had 6 Super Bowls in his fingers, and he's cut his own fingers off.
Yeah.
And too many of these people, you know, we've heard this term. That's how we play the game. We gonna run our stuff. Any quarterback, no matter how good he is, they're gonna run the way they want to run. They're gonna pass the way they want to pass, and they're not gonna get away from that for anything else. You know, having studied Eddie Robinson for a number of years, several others of the top quarterbacks and top coaches. They were gonna run their stuff. Don't get me wrong. Whether it was Tennessee State, AMU, they were gonna run their stuff. But at the same time though, they knew what worked best with the players they had, and they they maximize the moment with their own, you know, with their own quality of play and recruiting. There were some great guys that they just didn't recruit. I've seen that in some of them. Some guys, they knew would not fit skill-wise, character-wise, just football knowledge-wise. You know, and if they got somebody in who didn't fit, they found ways to keep them out early before he could terminate what they were trying to do. You go back and you look, and these are the guys who won around 80% of their games.
But we also see, Trent, we also see teams that are just plain cheap. I mean, if a running back gets a bonus, it's not the big bonuses that we've seen in drafts. Quarterbacks get big money bonuses. Wide receivers get big money bonuses. They even get guaranteed money. When's the last time anyone saw a running back get a significant bonus, let alone guaranteed money?
It's a perishable position, right? Because it's a perishable position. I mean, Ray Rice, when he was at Baltimore, he got caught up, and they clipped him, and no biggie, right? And he had some great games for the Ravens. When you start thinking about, I like what Fred said a lot. Well, a lot of what the brother says always is cool, but he talked about the simplicity of the statement. We're going to run our stuff. Case in point, Marty Schottenheimer. He had Barry Word. He had Christian Okoye. He started using Marcus more. Al Davis was the first one to start clipping the importance of the running back when he just totally threw Marcus Allen to the wind and made him a blocking back for like 3 years or so. Had him right on the bench. Right, MVP of the Super Bowl, Heisman Trophy winner, NFL leading rusher. Right, he went to Kansas City, Schottenheimer, gets resurrected. So Schottenheimer believed in running that rock. He had the Nigerian nightmare. He had Barry Word, the two-ton backfield, then Marcus. And then he relied on that defensive scheme. He had a strong secondary. De'Ron Cherry was back there with another brother. He had some really good DBs that were back there. And Derek Thomas was just – Albert Lewis, thank you. And Derek Thomas was just shredding shit, from the rush position with so many sacks. So he had this pass rushing attack in the AFC West and the pass throwing contest. He had this real rough ground game, and it didn't translate. Natron Mean, at San Diego, I think he was the team that went in there against the Niners. They go in there, and Steve Young, another running quarterback, they shredded the Chargers and the Natron Means type offensive system of the running game. And then LaDainian, no ring. So, there's a bandwidth of data that NFL executives, those who are going to write contracts, there's a whole division within, I know in the NBA, I'm certain it's in the National Football League, I know a brother that, I came up with me in hooping that he now – the contract analysis for the Chicago Bulls. The way that they do, and I think it's a title such as that, but it's not exactly how I said it to be, but they have all these analytic squads, who's going to get broken off, who has the longest bandwidth, who has the most longevity, how many games are long position, how does this translate? So it's not just purely an analytics of how you put together a structured team, like a fan sitting at home, I'm just making a fan observation. When you break people off and you start having these salary lines and who gets what, this, that, and the other, that running back position is now like that minimum wage worker. Like when people always just say school teachers are underpaid. That's the running back system in the NFL.
Exactly. Good analogy. That's a good analogy. Fred, in Carolina, you got a new player, Miles Sanders. He came from the Eagles. He gained 1,300 yards rushing last season, and he managed to get a second contract. Now, because he got a second contract, he'll get his pension as a member of the union, but Just how good do you think he's going to do as a Panther?
Okay. First of all, let me put this disclaimer out. We have, correction, they have a coaching staff in Charlotte / Carolina that so-so at best on their best days. They're beginning to talk about it. Remember, we're in the east side of the state.
Yes.
Just as there's the Charlotte Hornets, and their influence stopped at the Yadkin River. So far, the Carolina Panthers are being cut from the same cloth. There's no real reporting on them as of yet, unless they. I don't think they even have regular weekly press conference as of yet. They did something with kids about a week or so ago. Well, the week before the 4th. Having said that, to me, the Carolina Panthers so far are a joke. They're going to have to do some major cutting from guys left over from the previous regime.
Uh-huh.
And to make it work, you know, they had already gotten rid of a couple of bad apples that the other coach or the non-coach brought in because they were friends of his and people he liked. And unfortunately, a brother went down, the brother that was the interim coach.
Will.
He bit the bullet for that. And I don't know what is happening to him because he did quite well. But again, he's not white. So
yeah, he's a native too, right? He's from Charlotte as well, correct? Well,
he's from down the street, literally.
Right.
From where, well, let's sit down the freeway a little bit and over to the west. He's a hometown boy.
Right.
But unfortunately, in the grand scheme of things, they have an owner who is not from the area. They have coaches,
right? New York,
none of the stuff that you would think would count. There would have been a feather in his cap. None of that counted for anything. So personally, I'm a Steeler fan. And a lot of people are walking around scratching their heads about, you know, what are the Panthers going to do. And you got a few fans who are kind of diehard. And unfortunately, they're prepared to die hard because they don't figure it's going to be too well this year. Unfortunately, I agree with them.
Gary, Josh Jacobs ran the rock well for Oakland / Las Vegas last season. He ran 340 times, and he's going into season, I believe, 4 or 5. Now, he's already used up his miles as a running back. How much do you think the Raiders can get out of Jacobs, and can he get a second contract?
Well, I don't know where Vegas is going. They trade guard to Tampa Bay or whatever.
New Orleans.
They sold that every to the team. They don't sign up for a contract negotiations. This team is a complete mess. I don't believe they can win 7 games. I don't. Because I don't know where they're going to get the offense from. If they don't sign Jacobs, they ain't going to go anywhere.
That's sloppy. Ed, how do you think the front office are going to maneuver this running factor into their bottom line. Because somebody like Elliott, who's used mm-hmm. up, if they want him, they don't have to pay him more than the $1.5 million exemption one letter. But what are they going to do otherwise?
You're going to start seeing these running backs get picked up like mid-season based on injuries as filler,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Because they're not going to be ready for camp, and they don't have to break them off that money. You know, if they can, you know, I mean, the concept is to, like, you know, Fred talked about, we're going to run our stuff. It comes down to scheme. You know, so if they have a system in place where they can get a serviceable running back, get a few mm-hmm. 7 yards, get out in the flat and make some catches. What Elliott and what we see with a lot of these backs, you know, Barkley a little bit because, you know, like I said, he can't stay healthy. He's got value. Just can't get on this. Can't stay on the field. And so if you look at Elliott, same thing, had a lot of injuries. But Elliott can't break tackles anymore, right? You know, you get him an mm-hmm. open field, he's not shaking loose anybody. So there's no escapability impact with some of these
yeah.
backs, no elusiveness. The brothers that Marshawn was different though because you never seen him go backwards on any tackle ever until he made his comeback
right.
with the Raiders. Then he was going uh-huh. backwards a lot because he had lost the year. But
yeah.
if you look at it from this standpoint, Marcus Allen would be a quarterback in today's NFL. Maybe even Bo Jackson. They're not running backs no more, right? If they were coming
yeah.
up now with their athletic ability, they're under center, right? They're under center. And so, right? That's the evolution. I mean, these guys are under some of your tight ends or some of your elite wide receivers who may really be good, but if they can throw the rock and got wheels, they're under center, right?
True.
You know, so Randall Cunningham was probably the first phase of that as well when he came up, right?
Yeah.
Randall, you know, came up, you know, came above, but, you know, he got wheels. And so guys, even Culpepper, right, when Pep was playing, you know, he could,
yeah.
you know, break off some yards or be tough inside the five or whatever. And then, yes, a lot of these guys coming up now, like now we get these, it was this old axiom that if you were tall and you were in the playground but you could shoot and you had handles, get down low. Well, Durant and these brothers, 6'10", 6'11", gliding on the perimeter, they totally destroyed that theory. But if they came up in the 70s, they would be playing power center,
sure.
right? And they wouldn't be developing the same way for full maximization of their athletic system. Even Mahomes can, you know, put the ball under his arm. So to your point, Mike, if you GM in and you format and you're looking at that quote-unquote depth chart of your team
yeah.
and you're filling in your depth chart, you know, you're looking at the running back, I believe that, you know, right now, do teams even carry more than three running backs?
Exactly.
Three running backs, two guys to block. One of whom will be
exactly. yeah, that was Johnson shit.
They've even made the adjustments when it comes to fantasy football. You know,
right?
They're gonna you said Mike. You mentioned Mike Allstott. That's the last time that they mentioned a true fullback. You got hybrids now, but the bottom line is they're trying to make money. They'll throw whatever they can into whatever category they can, but the basic premise that you run the ball to win, you run the ball to succeed, is squashed. It's done. And guys ain't going to college to run the ball anymore. To make it to the NFL.
You're correct. The top fantasy football players, I don't play it, but it's always about the scoring. It's going to be quarter, like a Mahomes, no doubt, because he's going to throw up some crazy numbers, right? He's
yeah.
going to have, you know, go-getter stats every single time. But then after that, real close second is cats who can also run the rock. I mean, who can score the Jalen Hurts. You know, he's like a fantasy football dream pin because he can run
go.
The rock and get in the end zone as well as throw the rock.
Mm-hmm.
So that running back specific player, he's like, to your point, Mike, you made a great point. He's like an invalid. Receivers are worth way more value in that fantasy football scoring system than running backs. The last one that was quote unquote, you know, using this term generally for fantasy football, a fantasy football guy was Adrian Peterson when he was
yep.
Minnesota level. Adrian
right.
Peterson.
Right. But quarterbacks
Adrian
get bonuses and they get guaranteed money. Receivers get guaranteed money. Running backs don't get guaranteed money. And that's where
well,
we see the drop-off.
Well, now, G. Harris has already said, like, you know, the undervaluation of the running back is going to impact. It's going to
yep.
impact him as well. And even in
mm-hmm.
the so-called – I mean, there was time Big Ben threw the rock 45 times. And then that's when they brought in Todd Haley, right? Because the Rooneys were saying, and they got rid of the dude that was the Arians, was the offensive coordinator
right.
of Pittsburgh, right? They got rid of Arians because ownership stated that they wanted to go back to the Pittsburgh style of football, which was running the rock. So they brought in Todd Haley. What a disaster that was. With
okay,
him coming in under the concept of a running game, and it just got torched. Because Haley was starting to throw the – he had been all of a sudden starting to rock like 30-plus times because the running game was whack because they didn't have the backs or the offensive line.
Exactly.
Todd Haley is one of the things that's wrong with sports athletics in general, and specifically football,
that.
Because
yep.
– Again, we got that guy who we are going to run our stuff come hell, high water, or monsoon, whatever. And see, when he got between the windows up in the box, he could not make the X and O's work the way they should work. In other words, he was a lousy coach.
Terrible.
In spite of his pedigree and all that kind of good stuff, he called plays about three plays behind the reality of the game. Think about it, going all the way back to the 70s. Now we know what a moron some people thought. Terry Bradshaw was, and a lot of other quarterbacks from that era. Those guys could be playing on the field with a concussion and do a better job than a lot of these modern guys do. And they're in the box. They're at the very closest, they're on the sideline, but they can't keep up with the game. They can't. You play offense three, four steps ahead, three or four plays ahead. You play defense 1-2 ahead because a good defense is going to be making you as an offense do something you don't want to do, or they're going to take away something that you really want.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, you got to make adjustments for that. And these guys, no matter what their quote unquote pedigree was supposed to be, could not do it the way it needs to be done. And at the end of the day, you get a lead, you lose a lead. You got players wondering what the hell is going on. You got fans wondering, blaming players because that's who they see. And at the end of the day, you find out, hey, Mr. Todd is a jerk. He started seeing things on the field that weren't there, and at the end of the day, that's how you lose.
His father used to coach there, right? His father used to coach at Pittsburgh. And
I
the
don't
Rooneys
care
were like,
his grandfather.
No. I mean, to me, none of it. I'm neutral to all of it, right? Because I'm not a fanboy to any of it. My point is just, his father was there, and the Rooneys made Tomlin hire Haley. Because they wanted the run game. The Rooneys felt like they were getting away from the running game. That was a Rooney hire face in the familial connection with his dad. That's where I was going with that.
And that's why, Tommy didn't get fired.
Yeah, I mean, that dude that was coaching that went from Baylor, went from Temple to Baylor and Baylor to the NFL. I watched his opening game against the Niners. What a horrible coaching job. You just knew this guy was not going to last. You know, and it's like he allegedly was bringing the Bill Parcells system, you know what I'm saying, you know, to Carolina because, you know, all that crap. But it was crapest manifestus, right, because the scheme doesn't work. So, in other words, all this yesteryear way of doing things is a check. No, he mentioned about the 70 Steelers. I'm here to say that you'll never see a team, period, like the 70 Steelers, regardless of era and how they were put together and the makeup of their squad and the balance that they have and the way they got after and all the Hall of Famers they had. What, in one draft when the brother Bill Nunn was still there? Yeah, they would have four Hall of Famers in one draft. Right? You're not going to see that. Lambert, Swan, Stallworth, and somebody else, I guess. I don't know if it was Frank or was someone else was part of that. Forrest and Blunt. I know Swan, Stallworth, Lambert, and one more was a Hall of Famer.
The one from Carolina State. I'm having another brain fart.
Was it Shell?
Remember, Donnie Shell wasn't even drafted.
Right. But they had four. They had, maybe it was Webster, maybe it was one of their offensive linemen, right?
Mike Webster was the draft Hall of Fame were Webster, Stallworth,
Swan, and Lambert. They all came out the same.
Lambert.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then
Johnny Shell was an undrafted free agent.
Is none to the Hall of Fame?
Who?
Is none in the Hall of Fame?
He should be.
Bill Nunn. That's your architect. That's your architect of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Oh, Bill, you talking about Bill Nunn? Yes, he's in the Hall of Fame. He went in last year.
That's what I thought. That's what I thought.
I think he went in just before he died.
That's what I thought. And he was the conduit to the HBCU. That is your Branch Rickey that they be hyping up and shit as far as being this, you know, GM NFL guru. And he was not an official GM. He was a scout.
Yeah.
And he brought all that talent to the Birds.
Newspaper.
Right? So it
just
comes down
just
to
like,
two talent. Yeah.
Just like Lord Wells should go in also because he did that.
Yes,
for,
sir.
He did that not just
exactly.
for the Kansas City Chiefs. He
exactly.
actually did it for – he actually worked in an ad hoc way. He worked for the AFC, AFL rather.
Yes, exactly. Because
he was a guru that made the AFC and the AFL – Clear.
You're heavily HBCU.
Yeah.
And then
especially,
the Hunt family wisely brought him in, and he got all the brothers, Buck Buchanan, the Ernie Lass, the Otis Taylors, the Marsalises, right, and more. Willie Lanier.
You got a whole list of Hall of Famers in
exactly.
and some who should be in.
Yeah, exactly.
Because If Otis Taylor is not in the Hall of Fame, then there shouldn't be a Hall of Fame.
Lynn Dawson should not be in the Hall of Fame at all without Otis Taylor. And you know, and the thing about it is, it's like, okay, so Pittsburgh, wisely, the Rooney family, old time NFL, you know, patriarch, follows the Hunt modality because they seen what Wells did with the Chiefs. So Bill Nunn got on it.
Yeah.
Yep.
All
that's
these are
the
like
best,
these factors and all
that's,
of empowerment
that's the
empowerment
we have. That's
the
best cup of coffee and hot dog he ever bought.
Exactly. And then Landry got on the bandwagon. You know, when Bullet Bob Hayes didn't play a down of football at FAMU. You know, and then Ed Jones, who was originally went to Tennessee State on a basketball scholarship. He played like six games of high school football with the time he got to Tennessee State. He had a basketball scholarship. Then they say, yeah, I think even his first 2 years, he wasn't even, or maybe a year and a half, he was still hooping. He wasn't playing football. Then Merritt, they got eyes, his brothers can see. And they give football a whirl, Ed. And again, I know Tony talked about how Buck Buchanan's the first to pick, from HBCU, big league drafted overall number one at the American Football League. Well, then, Ed Tutar Jones hopes that for the NFL. He's the only one from HBCU to go number one overall.
Actually, Buck Buchanan was playing a pickup basketball game, and that was where he got spotted. And then none of the guys could handle him. And Robinson saw what he could do as a player, athletically, much more so than actual X's and O's when he was playing football.
Yeah. Ernie Ladd, too, because Ernie Ladd, my father tells me about, going against Ernie Ladd at Grambling. He was hooping at Grambling.
Yeah.
Before he flipped to the NFL as well. Yeah. And so, eyes for talent. Yeah. I mean, they turned it out. It's like the dude Reese, right? The dude Reese from the Giants. He was the GM for, I think, some Super Bowl teams, right?
Yeah.
I mean, no way a brother would – I mean, he never resurfaced as an NFL GM.
Yeah.
These are the people that have come forth and put the squads together.
And see, unfortunately, we don't have enough of those kind of guys who do the job or who are allowed to do the job the way it should go. And then because of that, we met with a lot of guys who hold positions, but they can't execute those positions. And then you see the same thing played out the same way when it comes to what you see as a game. In game, you wonder how is it this guy is doing this, that, and the other, and then wait a minute, I thought he was the best. And you have this whole litany of people out there who are, quote, talking heads, as well as reporters who not only go along to get along, they go along to try to develop their own narrative. And a lot of times, they're just wrong, but that's what gets put out.
That's right.
In the media. Jeff Saturday's this talking head, for years. And, I mean, obviously, he had somebody spellbound. Spellbound to get the Colts job.
Jeff Saturday played a year with my nephew at Duke. Everybody talked about how smart he was. I'm just watching the game. And I don't know what they call smart, but to me, I didn't see what they were talking about. I saw several, there were several guys between me in the Carolina and the Carolina Duke game that looked very well out there. But at the same time, someone that was quote unquote so smart did not, in my humble opinion, I didn't go to the locker room with my net, but in my humble opinion, he sucked.
Yeah.
And see, a lot of guys like that, like you look at Mike Webster. Mike Webster was not supposed to be too bright, supposedly. The deal was, though, there were a couple of techniques that he had that allowed him to get the best of a guy charging a certain way, and that's the way he always blocked. If you managed to cut him off from that move he had, hey, that was his ass.
Right.
And in blocking, a lot of times he had those kind of things. Because Art Shell who's the guy to play against? The guy to play next to Art Shell.
Upshaw.
Those two guys, remember the center that played between them was what, 220?
Jim Otto.
Yeah, Otto was small.
Jim Otto, I saw him in one media guide or something. They had him listed at 245, and another year they had him at 255 or something like that. And I'm thinking, he lost weight since last year, and he's supposed to be weighing 250. Technically, he was good blocker. Plus, he was quick, and he was decently smart. But you know, white guys were always listed as smart, intelligent, and something. Black guys were normally athletically gifted.
Exactly.
Well, the best center, out there was a brother named Dwight Stevenson when he was at Miami.
There you go, man.
Right? He was shredding until Marty Lyons, his former teammate with the Jets, blew his knee out on a chop block type shit, blindside.
Well, remember that.
Offensive linemen are not looking at people taking knee shots, but they could not handle Stevenson at all. He was like straight up heads up.
He was a teammate.
Yeah, exactly. And Lions took him out, man. Cheap shot bullshit. But Dwight Stevenson, that people will not know about him. But those remember, I never seen a center, that could just be blowing folks out like that, heads up over and over again. Shula knew what he was doing, and Stevenson was dynamite as a center.
Yes, he was. But when we look at the dynamics of this, an offensive line or lack of, all these things are factors that a front office can tell a running back, look, you got 1,500 yards last year. Our line helped you get 1,500 yards. Your worst season prior to that, you only got 900. You'll definitely take a chance on whether or not we'll get 1,500 from the next guy. Because we think our line's that good. Good luck in your new employment.
Got receivers, Mike, to your point. You got receivers again. To me, no doubt, if the question's raised, if you have on your board and you need some offensive firepower, you got a QB that can push the rock. We need to get the rock downfield. We need big plays. Yep. The NFL's based on big plays every weekend. Big play this, big play that. We need a cat that can go get it. The running back's not going to get picked. We're going with the receivers. Receivers,
there you go.
Average. Mm-hmm. Receivers average 100 yards a game, not running back. So what's my man's name again? The Cheetah. What, he had almost 1,700 yards in receiving last year?
Yep.
A running back's not getting you those numbers in yardage?
True.
For less receptions, right? So guy gets 100-plus receptions for 1,700 yards. A running back is not getting 1,700 yards on 100 carries.
True.
And not just that. According to today's thinking, they don't even want you to do that because, in the grand scheme of things, they want you to throw the ball far enough each time that you can either get first down with the catch or catch and run for a first down. And you want to be able to do that on either of the three initial downs so that you don't have to worry about punting. And at the end of the day, they have basically phased out running backs except those who are big enough, big, fast, strong enough to do this thing called pass blocking.
There you go.
Well, tight ends take care of that middle of the field, acting yardage-wise anyway, right? Kelce, for example, is a prime example of that, and there's others, that they are now getting that chunk yardage, and they're using these plays and these ways to get offensive out quick, out to the back, just running these reverse fields. Sending guys on the rollouts and go. You rarely see the screen pass, right? Some teams, the Steelers are always known to like executing a good screen pass, right? and getting guys downfield. That's their new running play. If the back doesn't have hands, that's the other elimination to the running back. Because if he's just a guy that can ground it out, but he has no hands in the open field and he can't get upfield with it, he's what's called a one-trick pony.
And a team is going to make the question for themselves, can we afford this one-trick pony? That's exactly it. It's become a specialization issue. It's like you're asking for cheddar cheese on top of your baked potato. Can you afford it? It's only 75 cents more. Yeah, he ran for 800 yards last year. Okay, we can afford it. There you go. You add him. But you know you ain't going to spend but so much more. And in the bottom line of things, that's what this has become. Running backs are suffering collateral damage because they've been jerked out of their position. Gary's guy, Jacobs, can run 1,500 yards, and they can say, that's not even 100 yards a game. So what?
Not even close.
Yeah.
What's the dude, what's the receiver they brought in from Green Bay last year?
Adams? That's a good
question.
Yeah,
there you go. Yeah, Deontay.
Devontae.
Now, this guy who's supposedly an alleged genius, McDaniels, it took him 12, I don't know, I'm over-exaggerating, it took him like after the whole season to get him off.
Right.
I mean, you know, so he had to rely on Jacobs because he couldn't get him off. And so what's his name, the owner, Allen, you know.
Mark Davis.
Mark Davis, owner of the Las Vegas Aces, the WNBA team, which is another story. So he literally had to call McDaniel in and was like, Josh. I'm breaking this Adams off some crazy loop. You know, I mean, we're selling out every game, man, but, you know, what's the situation where we can't get him to rock? You know, you're giving the ball to Jacobs. He's not getting Adams' money, nor does he have Adams' production offensively down the field. So then they got it together a little bit later. But he had to rely on Jacobs because his offense was so whack, only because he could not get the pass game going. And that's where he ran into troubles with Carr. And Carr ran into troubles with him.
No, I'm going to tell you what happened to the Raiders. And this happened 5 years ago. Derek Carr did not raise the offensive line. What I mean is this, Derek Carr went up against the Niners quarterback,
Garoppolo,
protesting. And when he said he didn't believe in protest, and the Raiders line was all black at the time.
That's right.
Yeah, that's a 5-year window. Speaking on just how McDaniel was structuring the team in 2022 specifically, right? And the fact that they had this freeze in the signing where Carr also played with Adams in college.
Yeah.
What's his name? McDaniel could not coordinate that for his life. And put a system together. The on-field game management is what I'm speaking to. You know, and they just had nothing efficient Well, you still got to get the rock to a guy that eventually they started getting some. He started getting some game winners and some walk-off plays for the Raiders late in the season. But again, Mike's question to the point of productivity on personnel. Jacobs got all those carries because of their lackluster passing game.
There you go.
So
you never want to get in a position where you can go one way.
Right. Jacobs said, I put in all this work. He's a Pro Bowler. And he's just sitting up there on the fence because whatever McDaniels feels he's concocting right now, and the fact that Adams was so unproductive most of the season under McDaniels, Mark, he ain't ready to break off that money because he does not have a problem with season ticket sales, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Like he did in Oakland. You don't have that problem in Vegas. Oversold.
The Oakland Raiders at the beginning of the year were always going out. What happened was people didn't go to the games. They didn't go because they watched on TV. As you had to remember the history of the Raiders when they went to L.A. and came back. When they came back from L.A.,
Blacked out. NFL. I mean, the politics. But nowadays, they're flush. They're flush with cash. Flush, flush, flush. So it's not about the fact the Raiders don't have the coffers to pay this player. You know, what was that jackass they hired as GM? Mayock? Jackass. Mike Mayock, the dude from the NFL Network, who went from the NFL Network to the GM job.
Again.
I mean, he got rid of, you know, that all-pro defensive end that went to Chicago, right? I forgot his name. Now he's with San Diego, where it's number 52, right? You know, he was on that team. All-pro. Then they also had the receiver that went to Dallas, who's like an all-pro. They never got replacements for that, you know, or did anything. Crosby's good, you know. I mean, pass rusher that they have currently right now, maybe the better of the two. But then Gruden, you know, again, poor hire. That didn't work out. You know, that didn't work out. It didn't work out the first time. You know, and so... You know, when you look at all these things, the on-field personnel,
this is what didn't be my draw, right?
Okay.
If you're an owner of a team and you hire a coach, right? And that coach goes to the opposition and beats you in the Super Bowl. Why are you hiring him again? What's wrong with you?
Yeah. Well, public relations, right? Because he took the job when he was in Oakland. You want to have, you know you're moving to Vegas. I mean, everybody knew they were moving to Vegas. I mean, even The Rock did a show talking about how the NFL is going to be moving to Vegas, right? Whatever that bullshit show was on HBO, right? Remember that he was with some guy, you know, putting something together to bring the NFL to Las Vegas. Everybody knew that they're coming to Vegas. Everyone knew that's going to be a gateway for the athletics to follow to come to Vegas.
Yeah.
Right? And so, you know, just a gateway. And everyone's pondering the dumb ish, thinking that, you know, they're going to get in the stadium deal in Oakland. It's not happening, right? So that's a big parking lot out there, Oakland, that they're going to have to get that stadium and good old Oracle Arena. That's all on one large lot. There, that's going to be empty buildings for activities.
We used to call it back in the day a white elephant. That's exactly what it's going to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I can recall, you know, going to Warrior games, you know, and it was time with the Raiders games, right? So that whole parking lot could be filled with those who are out there, you know, preparing for Raider football at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
The Warriors are playing all in the same lot, right? All that's over, you know, coming a year from now, especially when the athletics move. But, you know, Vegas is the cash cow, you know, for sports teams, sports franchises. And that's why the NFL is looking, NBA is looking at expansion in Vegas. Well,
Eric, years ago, I said mm-hmm. this five years ago,
mm-hmm.
the Oakland City Council told the has to be used to they didn't do anything.
Stadiums get built all the time in Cali. If you look at the Lakers at Staples and the kid with the Clippers, but now, the owner for the Clippers, he's building his own joint down there. And then San Diego had the same problem, with the Chargers, right, with stadiums.
Right.
So they share it now with the Rams, and so that's what happened to Oakland. It looked like forever it was going to take a long for the Sacramento Kings to get a arena. They got it done. Otherwise, they were going to move to Seattle, right?
Yeah.
But the difference between Sacramento and Oakland is that the public civic thing, and because it's the state capital of California, they leverage stuff. They leverage it. Real quick into that point.
The low-end people fighting the ill people, and the ill people... The young people did not want the Coliseum, period.
That's what I mean by civic, right? So the difference between that and Sacramento is because Sacramento is the state capital of California, Stern was all in for Seattle, right? There was no state. Locals like Kevin Johnson and others were doing all this rallying to keep the Kings in Sacramento.
Right.
They were doing all the rally, and I'm familiar with Kevin, but the point is that that still had no leverage with Stern. Stern, the money was Seattle, landslide. So the difference was because the state government is capital here in SAC, a lot of these lawmakers, governors included, when they bring in foreign dignitaries and they want to do a social, guess what? They can take them to an NBA game, right?
There you go.
All part of doing business, right? So where Sacramento won out on one principle, there's a lot of, Kevin Johnson got a lot of love on the Save the Sac stuff, but the reality was this, right? I mean, they were leveraged. They literally told Stern, here's the situation. You have four NBA teams in our state. Clippers, Lakers, Warriors, Kings, right? We'll start changing how we tax your ass if you take one of our teams out of state.
Yeah.
And then the other pro teams start getting leverage too, because the great majority for one state, is all in California. No, California dominates the number of teams in all professional sports, be it hockey, football, basketball, team sports. Right, so he was leveraged. Stern's a businessman. He's like, yeah, you make sense. All that is straight. So he said, okay, I'll make it happen. We'll keep you in SAC, even though we're losing money because there's going to be more money in Seattle. So they rewarded him with a David Stern way outside of Golden One Arena.
There you go.
That's how it's done.
That's food for thought. From the time we're getting to the point, we got to wrap this up. Professor, set it off, start things off.
Well, this time last week I was packing, getting ready to head to Texas for family reunion.
Yes.
I made it down safe and back safe.
Yes, you did.
Everything
yes.
looked pretty cool.
Yes.
I don't know. I know we'll be doing what we call coming home next year, which we haven't done since prior to the pandemic, because for the first 2 years we actually did everything over Zoom. Then last year, my sister, who lives in Charlotte, we actually went there to be with her, which fortunately we did because she's suffering from dementia and so forth now. And, and Nora may know you and Nora may ask who you and what you do to my room. But, things have played out, we had a good time and we've made a lot of progress on doing some of the family history. We'll be getting back on that one day next week. But, as we closing on it, we begin to close it, I think we have about, I want to say about 4 weeks before most of the college camps start opening up. I want to see, for me, this will be a weird year because this will be the first year without Eric Moore pulling a lot of the strings on HBCU. Information and so forth. and he passed away a few months ago. And as we, as we look, for me, it goes all the way back to 1984 when I first met him, and to know who he was. And I said, we look at all these great guys. Unfortunately, he's one of the ones. He'll be listed as a contributor for HBCU. I'm putting together a book of 1,000-plus HBCU, outstanding HBCU graduates. So, Eric, give me your bio. Wink, wink. And, it's just amazing the kind of people, we talk about the marriage, the Gaithers and all those kind of, we get to claim them as players, athletes, as well as coaches for the great thing they do for the game. Because, they're our big brothers and big sisters along the way. So keep moving, just working on things and keep moving forward.
All right. www.blackheritagereview.com. Books, history, all kinds of good stuff. Eric, come on with it.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, I always get building with the brothers, man. Always, really good discourse. Highly copied, highly emulated. So much of what we talk about disseminate across the media airways. But, hey, we got to raise folks up wherever they may be, and how we're able to do it, per se. But, like good discourse, again. So ran across some information. I mean, brothers may have talked about it, but, the disgrace. I'm not going to go into all the actresses I typically use with this person. Larry Nassar, Michigan State gymnastics,
right.
all the travesties he committed, where Simone Biles and company brought a $1 billion lawsuit against the FBI, and the settlement with USA Gymnastics and Michigan State. Michigan State had to pay $550 million for Nassar. And I believe, which is incredible to think that USA Gymnastics had $380 million they had to pay.
Unbelievable.
In their coffers. That's what I'm saying. That much in their coffers. It was a combination of USA Gymnastics and USA, I think, Paralympics. Had to break off $380 mil for all the crimes against humanity with those young women.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So, in other words, when someone has to break off $880 million to settle a $1 billion lawsuit. There's a lot of unhappy people wherever they may be for whatever. So Nassar, when he first easily got convicted, was sent to Arizona, and then he got transferred to Tampa. Upon arriving in Tampa, they put him in general population, where he was immediately shanked multiple times. They used the word stabbed, but prison verbiage is shanked, right? Multiple times.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know, the gentleman's current condition, nor am I cheerleading the vitriol he faced, while appearing in general population. Yet one of those scenarios and tenets that take place that let you know that, the streets are watching.
You got that right. Karma might be late sometimes, but she never misses an appointment. Gary.
All right.
Tomorrow is the beginning of the Women's World Cup in New Zealand.
There are
seven new teams in the competition. The USA will play one of them. It's Vietnam tomorrow. Vietnam won the Asian Cup 3 months ago. Congratulations to Vietnam in their first World Cup. The United States is going after a three-peat. We will see. There we go. What's up? All right, Sunday is Angela Bovio. Angela Bovio.
Angela Bovio.
Uh-oh. Okay, got the hot chance with Bofill.
Angela Bofill. Angela Bofill versus Lisa. I'm joking with you, G.
There you go. But I'll sit there and make sure that Gary's on the line for the whole show. And see if she's talking to me.
Dang, Angela Bofill. Where's, I mean... Just, where's Nona Hendrix when you need her?
gentlemen, that was the best for in-person concert I ever been to with Andy Bovios. I could not believe what I was hearing.
Not Julie, they stopped
like the record.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I let you. Well, you're talking about a total different era where you know everyone could blow. You know, I mean, someone like Angela Bofill doesn't need the mic. Where Beyonce's auto-tuned and needs all the all the toys. Not someone like Angela Bofill or like Phyllis Hyman. You know, they could sing flat footed and just kill it.
Eric, I could not believe. Every single note was like, I was like, are you kidding me?
Wow.
Well,
wow, that's awesome. Yeah. Props to Angela.
Yeah, before Gary drools all over the microphone, I got Gary. We'll see you Sunday. For everybody else who's traveling, once you get from A to B and back, A-OK. And a shout out to Tony. Who gets Negro Dominance points being held again?
Yes, he does.
Well, that's what we do here, Black Athlete. We are having a game.